Stu Does America.
StuDoesMerch.com. StuDoesMerch.com. Get your Joe Biden elderly man with a poor memory t-shirts and mugs. The code is Stu10. You'll save 10%. And check out the show on YouTube. YouTube.com/StuDoesAmerica. You know, when you're doing a show on YouTube, you have to do these like special pictures that show how excited you are about the show. And like, I notice them on every other video, and we have to do them too. And I was thinking to myself, you never see that moment in the actual show because like the person's making the crazy face, but they did that before. It's not even in the video. So just to be completely transparent with you, I'm just gonna start doing these during the show. So there you go. That's gonna be the cover of the entire episode. You're gonna love it. Josh Hammer is gonna be here with the latest on the Supreme Court's discussion of immunity for Donald Trump. There's more economic news for Joe Biden. That sucks. We'll go over that because it really kind of sucks for you. It's probably good that Joe Biden has bad economic news, but it sucks for you. And we'll get into that here in a little bit. We're gonna start though by doing Charlottesville 2.0. Who wanted a sequel? I know I did. Who wanted another version of it? Because that's kind of what we have. And I will say, we're gonna start though with a product recall alert. And, you know, we don't normally do this, but like with, sometimes there's like salmonella in eggs. And I want to make sure that you understand a product has been recalled and progressives have recalled this product, the Coexist bumper sticker. Of course, you've seen it before. They no longer mean this one at all. Now, of course, they didn't mean it even back then. But now, by the way, look, keep that up there for a second. Now, you notice how much crap they've added to this? Like, at the beginning, it was the C, it was the crescent, and you had the X was the Jewish symbol, and at the end, you had the Christian symbol with the T. Now everything's, what? I don't even know what half of those things are. They've really muddied the waters with the Coexist logo. And it's been recalled because they no longer want to coexist. They want all the Jews dead these days. So they'll revive. Next time Charlottesville rolls around, they'll take the Coexist bumper stickers back out. But for now, please return them. They're dangerous on the left. So much going on campuses across the country. USC has closed campus until further notice. Following anti-Israel protests, 93 arrested for trespassing. This isn't normal. I have a friend who has a kid who's the school only goes up to fourth grade. And they had their school canceled today because the internet router went out. What the heck? You're canceling school because the internet router went out? Are you just showing YouTube videos all day? What's going on at the school? Well, apparently not anti-Israel protests. University of Texas, Palestine protest. I'm going to say Palestine because it sounds better. Palestine protest leads to more than 30 arrests, including a Fox 7 photographer. That's always interesting. Emerson protesters arrested. CBS News headline. You kind of expect that, I suppose, at Emerson. But this is kind of going all over the place. You're seeing these protests in almost every major left-wing university. I do have a question, though. Why do they all have the same tents? Was there a tent depot discount? Like, was there a Groupon? Like, what? Why does everyone have the same tents? It's almost like, seems like maybe a central organization's buying them. That's just it's a crazy idea, but maybe so. If you haven't seen the violence and chaos for yourself, here's a quick look back at the last 24 hours. Fights. Campus craziness. No one won a college football title, so you know that these riots are bad. You've got police. By the way, African-American police being attacked by protesters. I guess that's not racist. Just want to make sure you guys know that. That one's not racist. More chaos. A couple people filming. Lots of people pushing. Anger, screaming, swearing. Higher education, boys and girls. Here it is. Right in front of you. Look at that. And it's just nonsense. It's craziness all around the country at places you're sending your kid to, I guess, willingly and paying $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year. Good job, parents. This is a thinking man's university, but there you go. By the way, we all know these actions, what they were going to be. We knew that going after police, going after property was all part of the game from the beginning. We talked to a reporter or columnist from the Toronto Sun a day or two ago, and he told us that he got this manual that was supposed to describe how this Palestine action stuff would go down. And, you know, you might not have believed him. And then he sent it to me. And here's, we'll just give you some of it. Palestine Action, the underground manual. Step one, create a cell. A cell is an autonomous group taking actions without detection as part of Palestine Action Underground. Just get like 3 to 4, 3 to 5 people. Don't make it too big because then people can penetrate. There can be police that might try to penetrate your group. Step two, pick a target. They have a list of targets, how to find the evil ones you're trying to stop. Step three, prepare for action. When preparing for action, knowing your target and doing an effective reconnaissance is vital. They say look for places to park, security, CCTV cameras, police patrols, barbed wire. Make sure you don't get caught on that barbed wire while you're leaving. Step five is take action. The day has come. Your action is planned. You're all equipped and ready to go. Good luck. It's really actually kind of encouraging. When you think about it, post action is step six. Destroy all the evidence. Remember to get pictures of the off the burner smartphone. They go through all of this. Of course, you don't use your regular cell phone because then you can be traced. It's almost like they are planning on doing something illegal. You go into violence and vandalism and all sorts of things you're not supposed to do. Violence has been part of these protests from the beginning, and that's why you know the words of AOC are coming. AOC praises peaceful protests at Columbia and Yale. Young people shaping this country. Yes, they're shaping it, all right. What are they shaping it into? Now, of course, the demands from these protesters are as absurd as you think they are. I heard a report this morning say, well, I mean, it's very, what they're asking for is simple. They just want these universities to divest from anything related to Israel and any company that is profiting off the war. Now, you know, if you simply wanted them to stop investing with companies that are profiting off the war, that still wouldn't be simple, right? It would be probably hard to calculate. My guess is they think like McDonald's is one of those companies. I mean, anybody, any way they can justify this, they want every piece of capitalism destroyed. What a weird coincidence. But how do you, maybe you could justify that as like, we are against this action by Israel. We think it's bad. How exactly do you justify avoiding all Israeli companies? And you might say, well, Israel's the country doing this. Yeah, but about what? Probably 40% of the country doesn't agree with giant chunks of what's going on there right now. What about the companies owned by those people? It seems like you're just against any Jews. That kind of seems like this is just shorthand for you can't spend money with Jews, which would be difficult to imagine, except for how many times they've admitted it. So we'll see. I will say there have been lots of voices now trying to react to this and try to put it in perspective. Benjamin Netanyahu is one of them. Watch.
What's happening on America's college campuses is horrific. Anti-Semitic mobs have taken over leading universities. They call for the annihilation of Israel. Mm-hmm. They attack Jewish students. They attack Jewish faculty. This is reminiscent of what happened in German universities in the 1930s.
Yeah.
It's unconscionable. Mm-hmm. It has to be stopped. It has to be condemned and condemned unequivocally. But that's not what happened. The response of several university presidents was shameful. Now, fortunately, state, local, federal officials, many of them have responded differently, but there has to be more. More has to be done.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. Greg Abbott has condemned these student activists here in Texas. These protesters belong in jail. We are seeing attacks on Israelis in the streets. Miss Israel was attacked at a pro-Palestinian protest in New York, hit in the head with a face, I guess, with a sign. And it's interesting, these protests are made up of different groups, right? Like, you can't say that everybody in these groups is, you know, hardcore pro-Hamas supporter. You know, probably 50% of them are hardcore pro-Hamas supporters, outside activists, groups from socialist groups and anti-Semitic hate groups that have just come in to say, yeah, you know what, we don't go to Columbia, we don't go to NYU, we don't go to USC, we don't go to UT Austin, but we're here to say really bad things about Jews. So you have that going on. And then you have about 50% of people who, you know, look, they're at some level, they're just idiots, right? Like some of this is just nonsensical performance art, right? Like they're college students. They want to be involved in whatever's going on. They go out there, they run their mouth. They think they know what they're talking about. And of course, they don't. You might not believe me that there are examples of this, but let me just give you one. Here is a student protester that has a passionate disagreement with the policies of Israel.
And what would you say is the main goal with tonight's protest?
I think the goal is just showing our support for Palestine and demanding that NYU stop. I honestly don't know all of what NYU's doing.
Is there something that NYU's doing?
I really don't know. I'm pretty sure they're... Do you know what NYU's doing?
About what?
About Israel. Why are we protesting here?
Palestine will be free!
I wish I was more educated.
I'm not either. I came from Colombia. I was there up at Colombia, and we came down. They said NYU students needed our support. So I came down. I heard there's lots of cops. Some people were saying it was getting dangerous.
I love the girl who's wearing the mask, which really is doing a lot for you outside. I might remind you, the New York Times reported years ago that there has never been one single case of COVID-19 passed outdoors except for close conversation. That's it. So all you had to do is kind of stand a few feet away from someone and that would be enough. But forget all of that, because, of course, the reason they're wearing the COVID mask, we talked to a reporter today who discussed this. They're doing this to hide their identities. And now that masks have been normalized because of COVID, they're just using this and no one can really say anything to them. If you were wearing a mask before COVID, people would be like, whoa, what's going on? Why are you trying to hide your face? Now it's like, it's health? Question mark? Anyway, this is just performance art. I mean, the one with the mask on said it well. I wish I was more educated. We wish you were more educated, too. So we have that in common. It's good to see. But, like, if you didn't know what the protest was about, why would you be there? I mean, I have a lot of things I really care about. Like, I legitimately have strong passion for. You know how many protests I go to? Basically none. Okay? Why? Because I'm a fat, lazy American, mostly. I don't know. Are you a big protester? Are you out of protests all the time? Would you go to a protest even for something that you cared about deeply? What about something you didn't even know what it was? I remember doing this at least one or two times. I remember when I was in high school, they used to have these walkouts for something. I don't know what it was. They would say, hey, we're walking out at 1 p.m. to protest. At that point, just kind of ran off and became muddled. And then at 1 p.m., guess what I did? Walked out in solidarity with whatever the hell they were talking about. Because you know where I wasn't? In math class. And I gotta imagine a bunch of this is just stupid performance art. You notice how much more of this is happening since social media? How many protests have we had to cover since the social media thing came up? I mean, it's just like everyone's performing for their little cameras. I will say this, we have these t-shirts still at studiosmerch.com. We haven't promoted these in a while, but they're still up there. Learn, then protest. The order is important, okay? Learn, then protest. Try to keep that in mind as you go forward. But I'm also interested in the anti-Semitic part of this. Now, I don't know if dopey college girl who didn't know why she was there is an anti-Semite. She very well might not be. She may very well just be an idiot. And we can all hope. By the way, this is one of those situations where being an idiot is the better option. I hope she's just a moron. But it's very possible that she is just kind of like a passerby that doesn't even know why she's there protesting. She basically admitted that. I don't know that she's a hardcore anti-Semite. She's probably not. She's probably a delightful person in every other circumstance. However, you have to realize that there are anti-Semites out there, and there are a lot of them on the left. And we're seeing thousands and thousands and thousands of people gather at these protests in giant chunks. This is admitted by even mainstream coverage. About 50% of these protesters are coming from outside the university. And many of these people are the ones holding up the signs, bragging about October 7th. All these pro-Hamas signs, all these pro-Hamas chants, the harassment of Jewish students. A lot of this is coming from people who aren't even at these universities. But it does shine a light on the fact that we have quite a difference in reaction when it comes to anti-Semitism. If anti-Semitism is backed by liberal principles, progressive ideals, pro-Palestinian ideals, gosh, it's treated totally differently than, let's say, the boys over in Charlottesville with the tiki torches. When you are supposedly, and I put this in massive air quotes because nothing that anyone said in Charlottesville has anything to do with the ideology that I hold, which I describe as conservative. But if you happen to be one of these alt-right type people and you're in Charlottesville, you got a much, much tougher run of it there from the media. In fact, it was months and months of stories about how terrible this one protest was. Now, look, the Charlottesville Standard is interesting here because by any definition, what we're seeing now is much worse. It's impossible to deny otherwise. Yes, we have had a terrible, terrible protest in Charlottesville, but it was one time with a bunch of crazy people, and then it was gone. They tried to redo it the next year, and nobody showed up. Like, they had to basically cancel the rally because nobody showed up. We have dozens of major universities fielding crowds of thousands. We're having a Charlottesville in every city every Tuesday, and no one seems to care. Why is that? Could it be that anti-Semitism for a lot of these people in the media has nothing to do with it? Anti-Semitism is a nice, it's like an easy thing to call the people you don't like, right? Like, you call them anti-Semites, you call them racists, you call them homophobes, you call them Islamophobes, you just come up with what you call them, Nazis, whatever name is nearby you hang on to. But when your side are the anti-Semites and your side are echoing Nazis, like word for word, no criticism seems to be here. It's a mostly peaceful protest. I think by any measure, these are much, much worse than what we saw in Charlottesville. Now, you know, obviously there was horrible violence in Charlottesville committed by one particular person, and that's, and it maybe has not been replicated yet, thank God. But other than that, I mean, I think it's quite clear. Now, these questions are being brought up, I think, fairly by several in the media. Barry Weiss asked, for a second, imagine that black students at Columbia were taunted with chants of go back to Africa. Or imagine that a gay student at Yale was surrounded by homophobic protesters and hit in the eye with a flagpole. Or imagine if a campus imam told Muslim students that they ought to head home for Ramadan because campus public safety could not guarantee their security. There would be relentless fury from our media and condemnation from our politicians. Just remember the righteous and rightful outrage over the white supremacist Unite the Right march in Charlottesville in 2017, where neo-Nazis chanted, "The Jews will not replace us." This weekend at Columbia and Yale, student demonstrators did all of the above, only it was just directed at Jews this time. They told Columbia students to go back to Poland. A Jewish woman at Yale was assaulted with a Palestinian flag, and an Orthodox rabbi at Columbia told students to go home for their safety. What will the response be? Now, Philip Klein of National Review responded to that. He said, I would add that the problem isn't that Jews are the wrong victims so much as the campus leftists are the wrong perpetrators. If the exact same stuff were happening against Jews, but at a southern university led by white MAGA supporters, it would be also treated much differently. Yeah, I think he's right on that one. I think we've already seen this happen over and over and over again, because now apparently Charlottesville was a good thing. Charlottesville was a good thing. We didn't like the fact that the alt-right doesn't even support low taxes. That's always my example. But I don't even know what they support that's actually conservative. But I guess because they were seen as white people with short haircuts, we're supposed to be okay with calling them Nazis. But when it's people with long haircuts and a lot of women with underarm hair, then it's obviously a good thing that they're going after Jews. Is that where we are? And I got to say, like, the Charlottesville slogan that was quoted in that tweet and that everyone probably remembers from back in the day, Jews will not replace us, quite obviously is not as bad a slogan. It's bad, but it's not as bad a slogan as remember and always remember October 7th, and October 7th is coming for you. I mean, neither group is good, but I mean, if you had to pick one of those slogans, I mean, the replacement thing is... I mean, look, they're all saying pretty much the same thing, but geez, I the left seems to be very emboldened to say the real thing. The white supremacists are like, we just want them to replace us. I mean, I don't know what happened to white supremacists. They're all like, at one point they were like, we're supreme. And now they're like, please don't replace us. I don't know what the whole slogan there is, but that's what it is. Look, October 7th only means one thing. It means rape. It means murder. It means torture. It means the decapitation of children. Saying that you wish October 7th was every day is basically arguing for every Jew on the planet to be eliminated, as all of them know, and as everyone in the media knows. I mean, I remember when the Charlottesville thing happened. I watched the Vice documentary on it, and I'm trying to think, that was 2017, so it was before this show started. I don't remember what show I was on at the time, maybe the radio show. I remember praising the Vice documentary. I remember thinking it was really good. Like, they did a good job getting in the middle of that and uncovering this awful section of society. I remember saying, these people are terrible. Everyone agreed on that on the right. And yet still, it was months of stories about how basically we do like them. Okay? Basically we do. We're not getting this from the media today. And now, the only argument that was ever made about the Charlottesville thing was to say, look, the scale is a little odd here. I mean, I think we should keep the scale in mind. This is one rally. It's not that big of a deal. It's not that big of a movement. This is a bunch of terrible people gathering, and now it's over. The scale is 20, 50, 100 times that rally every single day? Does this make sense to anybody else? Now, protesters and media have been complaining that these students might be identified and singled out and maybe not even be hired by their law firms later on in life. I mean, what a terrible shame. Really? Do you remember what they were doing in Charlottesville? They were going through the video frame by frame to identify every single person who went to the rally. Let me give you an example of this. They're crying that they're not going to get hired at their law firm. Do you remember Cole White? Remember this guy? Here he is, standing with the tiki torches. I don't know, he looks like Matt Stone in basketball, but it's not him. It's Cole White, with a very solid white name for a white supremacist rally. Cole White. And you're thinking, who cares? I don't remember Cole White. No one remembers Cole White. But let me tell you what happened to Cole White. He went to this rally. If he's at this rally, he's probably an idiot, okay? And probably a white supremacist. I don't know. I don't know his background. But they went through the frame, and they went all over social media to identify who Cole White was. And you know what they did with that information? They got him fired from his hot dog stand. They chased him across the country, and they got him fired from his hot dog stand. I mean, a double standard doesn't even cover it. Look, white supremacists were wrong when they were being anti-Semitic in Charlottesville. And they're wrong when they say it today. But these campus protests are just as bad, if not worse. And you know what I think? This is a crazy idea. And I don't know, maybe I'm out on a limb on this. But I think anti-Semitism is wrong all the time, no matter who does it, no matter what party they support. Maybe that's the type of standard we should embrace in America once again. Making sure you have fruits and vegetables in your diet is important for maintaining a healthy diet. Of course, making sure you have a healthy you. It can also be difficult, of course, especially if you're busy. The average person doesn't even eat half of the recommended servings in a day, and that's a huge gap in nutrition. And inflation has seriously increased the cost of fruits and vegetables. That's why Balance of Nature is here. They're their on-the-go solution for your fruits and vegetables, and they haven't raised prices in 10 years. Their proprietary blend of 31 fruits and vegetables comes in easy-to-swallow capsules. So you can just pop it down. You can wash it down with vodka if you want, I suppose. I mean, I don't think that would be the healthiest thing to do. But the bottom line is you'd be getting your fruits and vegetables either way. Imagine trying to eat 31 different kinds of fruits and vegetables in a single day. Well, that's difficult to do normally, but with Balance of Nature, super easy. Get it done in a few seconds. When you go to balanceofnature.com, you get 35% off plus 10% of any additional sets with your first order as a preferred customer by using the discount code STEW. This is limited to 5 sets, but you'll save a ton of money while getting fruits and vegetables you need into your diet. Go to balanceofnature.com. Balanceofnature.com, use the promo code STEW for 35% off. It's balanceofnature.com, promo code STEW, get 35% off today. I want to bring in Josh Hammer. He's the senior editor at large for Newsweek and host of both The Josh Hammer Show and America on Trial, both great podcasts you should definitely subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts. Josh, thanks so much for coming back on the program.
Stu, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Hope you're doing all right.
Yeah, hope you are as well. I want to start here, and it's a good question for you. How are you doing? Because we started the show with a commentary on these protests going on nationwide. I don't like calling them protests because, man, they don't really seem like protests to me. They just seem like a Hamas support groups at this point. What's your reaction to this? Did you think you'd see this in this country?
No. No, the short answer is no. I did not think that I would ever see this in this country. And it makes me profoundly sad. And virtually every fellow Jew who I speak with is profoundly disturbed about what is going on out there. I mean, we're in the middle of the Passover holidays, too. And, you know, this came up in conversation over our Seder dinner table on Tuesday evening. I mean, the comment that one friend said to me recently is, you kind of feel like you're in this moment where the tectonic plates are shifting under your feet, and it's very uncomfortable because you don't have control necessarily fully over the situation. And it's just, it's a uniquely toxic brew. It's a combination of a lot of factors. It's the 1960s era cultural Marxism and radicalism. The chickens are coming home to roost. Chris Rufo wrote a whole book on this last year. It's the chickens coming home to roost of reckless open borders immigration policy that has paid no attention whatsoever to the kind of cultures where we are actually bringing in our immigrants from. And it is the rise of this intersectional ideology that increasingly views not just the state of Israel, but also Jews themselves as the quintessential oppressor class, which anyone who's ever studied history could tell you is just ridiculous because the Jews are the most genocided people in the history of the human species. But it's sickening. It is absolutely beyond sickening. Stu, I'm a fairly young guy. I graduated college in 2011. I did not deal with any of this on campus. This rise of this level of intense, seething hatred is a relatively recent phenomenon. And you're at a point where it is literally dangerous to be a kippah-wearing Jew and Israeli flag-waving Zionist on a campus. I saw one text message that went viral on social media earlier this week. The mother of a freshman girl at Columbia, a Jewish girl, the mother describes her husband, so the father, going to pick the daughter up and remove her as the Orthodox rabbi there instructed them to do. She described it as them like refugees fleeing a war zone, like the last boat out of Saigon in the 1970s. I mean, what is happening right now? It's totally mind-boggling, Stu. The mind reels, frankly.
And what's the, I know you mentioned a couple of underlying causes here, but I mean, the acceleration of it is fascinating. This is not brought upon because of what Israel has done since October 7th. Like, these things have been bubbling for a long time. Yep. Obviously, these are ancient hatreds, showing their ugly heads yet again. But like, how do we figure out why this is happening and why it's accelerating so quickly?
So I guess my working thesis, and I think a lot of others share this view, there was actually an essay written at the Atlantic of all places by an essayist named Franklin Foer, who's probably a liberal, frankly. I probably don't agree with him on many things, but what he wrote in that essay, which is a conclusion that I myself have reached, is I think the golden age of American Jewish life is basically over. So, you know, in many of the decades following World War II, you know, call from the 1950s, 1960s until maybe 10 years ago, you know, American Jews had it really good in this country. You know, not that American Jews ever had it bad. America, thank God, has been spared the pogroms and all the sorts of horrific animus. You had George Washington, John Adams, who were genuinely philo-Semitic figures. They were pro-Jewish. So, you know, it's very much ingrained in the American DNA. But at least after World War II, I think you had this almost kind of Western guilt, maybe even American guilt, because of the way that FDR handled the Jews during World War II, perhaps a little bit of that. And that kind of cashed out in favor of the Jews basically living good lives and living, thriving in a meritocratic system where they could rise up the ranks of the elite universities and the professoriate and lawyers, bankers, accountants, all these nice jobs and everything. And I think at this point, now we're so long after World War II, the last Holocaust survivors tragically are passing away. The younger generation just has no memory, no literal or metaphorical proverbial memory of what happened less than 100 years ago in continental Europe with the greatest recorded attempt or the greatest actual attempt at genociding a people, again, in human history. And I think that is very much something, again, that is on the minds of many of my fellow Jews here. The conversations of people talking about is it time to leave? Is this really the 1930s all over again? I'm not there yet, to be clear. I'm not planning on leaving leaving anytime soon. I'm an American patriot. I love this country. But certainly we need to double down our efforts to fight back against this evil. The key point here, Stu, for the non-Jewish listeners and viewers here is that anti-Semitism is here, there, and everywhere a symptom of a broader societal and civilizational rot. Every time you have something historically that goes wrong in a country, it's the Jews who are the inevitable scapegoat. They get blamed, but they're getting blamed because there is something wrong. There's something missing. And I think that is what I think the thinking class, the intelligentsia in this country needs to think very hard about and try to propose concrete solutions to rectify that.
And it's just such a disturbing time in this country. Let me switch gears here. You have a podcast, great podcast, called America on Trial, where you talk about everything that's going on. And it's hard to keep track of it, especially if you're not a lawyer. You do a great job explaining all of this. And can we go to the what everyone's calling the hush money trial, even though that's not what he's being charged with, the Stormy Daniels situation with Donald Trump? David Pecker was testifying today. And as I go through this, like, I always thought this was the weakest of the four cases, but it's weaker than even I realized. Can you kind of give us a boiling down of what's going on?
Yeah, so the prosecution's first witness this week is David Pecker, who's the former head of the National Enquirer, and he has described in great and at times lurid detail how he operated this so-called catch-and-kill scheme where they would essentially purchase unflattering stories about Trump, and then they would choose not to run it or to choose to run it in a slightly different fashion, essentially just trying to burnish Trump's reputation by any means. You know, first of all, so-called catch-and-kill is not illegal. There's nothing actually inherently illegal about purchasing the rights to a story and then choosing not to do anything with it. This has been going on for about as long as journalism in its modern manifestation has been going on there. But more generally speaking, Stu, this case is beyond farcical. I mean, it's farcical for at least five or six different reasons. So the underlying misdemeanor is New York State fraudulent bookkeeping charge. That's for the 34 separate one-time payments that Michael Cohen made to Stormy Daniels on the precipice of the 2016 election. Now, that has a two-year statute of limitations. Now the way that Alvin Bragg purports to circumvent the statute of limitations while simultaneously hiking it from a misdemeanor to a felony is because he says it was done in furtherance of a campaign finance law violation. Now, there's two problems with that. One, campaign finance is a federal crime, not a state crime. So why is Alvin Bragg even bringing this charge in the first place? He's a local prosecutor. He's not a U.S. attorney. Second of all, that has its own statute of limitations problem. They say they waived it because 1 year didn't toll during COVID. That's kind of suspect in and of itself. But even accepting all of that, even if we accept all of that, it still fails for one very important reason, which is as Brad Smith, who was a former Bill Clinton-nominated FEC federal election commissioner, he's been making the rounds saying this point. In order to prove a campaign finance violation beyond a reasonable doubt, which is the criminal threshold anywhere, you have to show that that payment was made for the sole and exclusive reason to boost that candidate's election chances. Here is why it fails, Stu. This is Donald Trump. This is the guy who around the same time these payments were being made. We had the Billy Bush video grabbing by the, you know what? You don't think the voters knew what they were signing up for? I mean, to say that they needed this to get Donald Trump across the finish line, that's the only reason? I think it's absurd on its face.
I completely agree with you. And it seems like, and you could explain this maybe if I'm thinking of this wrong, but it's like you have a situation where these payments were made right before the election. So if you were saying, okay, these payments were made before the election and that crime was built to affect the election, maybe you'd have a case. But again, they're not charging him with a crime related to the actual payments. They're charging him with the bookkeeping, and the bookkeeping stuff all happened after the election. So how could it be connected to a campaign finance crime? How could it have influenced the election that Michael Cohen, you know, it filed an invoice 11 months after the election? It makes absolutely no sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, nothing about this case makes any sense. I mean, it's also worth bearing in mind, Stu, that the federal prosecutor's office, the SDNY, the Southern District of New York, they spent a lot of resources looking into possibly pressing charges against Trump. They ultimately decided not to do so because it was so frivolous. Even Alvin Bragg's own predecessor in the New York County, New York DA's office, Cy Vance Jr., who, much like Alvin Bragg, is a man of the left, he also looked into this, and he also said that he was not going to press charges. The only reason that Alvin Bragg is bringing these charges, where the SDNY and his own predecessor, Cy Vance, did not do so, is for the very simple reason that Alvin Bragg is a Soros-funded hack of the highest order who literally ran for office on pursuing charges against Trump. And sure enough, that is what he is doing. Now, there is a silver lining here, Stu, and it's admittedly not it's not a great silver lining, but there is something of a silver lining here, which is all it takes is one. All it takes is one juror to get a mistrial, to get a hung jury. And when the jury pool was selected last week, I found one fact very interesting here. There are two lawyers on the jury. One's a corporate lawyer, one's a civil litigator. You know, New York City, all else equal, I assume that they're probably liberal. Maybe not, but probably more likely than not, just because of where they live in New York City. Having said that, Stu, what I just explained with the statute of limitations issues, the local prosecutor bringing a federal charge, can he even do that? I mean, there's so many bare bones questions that a first year law student should be able to pick out of an issue spot or final exam that the mere presence of two lawyers on the jury actually does give me a little bit of optimism.
That's interesting. OK, before you go, we got about 1 minute left here, Josh. Every report I hear is that this is the only case that's going to make it to trial before the election. First of all, is that actually true? And so is this the only one that Trump has to survive before the election? And number two, if he is able to survive this somehow, is there a bounce back effect that like they charged him with all this stuff and the one thing they got into court, they couldn't even get him on? Is there a bounce back effect to some of these voters who were skeptical of voting for a felon, as they've been saying?
So I think it is true. The only other case that has a chance of making it to a jury before November is the Florida classified documents case. That's going to be a closer call. Notably, Trump is using the same attorneys led by Todd Blanche in both New York and the Florida Mar-a-Lago case. You know, they literally can't be in two places at once, so something's going to have to give there. I do predict this will be the only case to make it to trial before November. To your second question, I think that makes a lot of sense, and I would absolutely agree with your assessment and predict that there will be a bounce back effect, and Trump will benefit tremendously of this if you have just one juror to acquit. All it takes is one. It's a very important thing to remember.
Josh Hammer, senior editor at large for Newsweek and host of The Josh Hammer Show and America on Trial. Make sure to check those out wherever you get your podcasts. Josh, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Stu.
Well, I've been telling you for a while that the economy sucks. You may actually know that because, you know, you live a life in America. But it's been more than just that. And of course, this is affecting the election. And one of the things I've been talking about is how the media is in an all-out deflection effort to try to make you think the economy's good. Because if the economy's good, then Joe Biden's probably going to win. You know, it's the economy stupid is a little too basic for the actual situation as far as analysis of who wins elections, but it's a pretty good leading indicator. If Joe Biden can get to around even, about half the country thinking, things are pretty good, half are thinking pretty bad, he's in a pretty good spot to win this election. Last I saw, he was at minus 20. So that sounds pretty bad. However, he was minus 60 just a year ago. So it's coming the direction that you might not want if you do not want Joe Biden to become president. The reason I bring this up is even though they're trying to spin all this good news, we keep seeing bad news out of the economy. GDP growth slowed to a 1.6% rate in the first quarter, well below expectations, says CNBC. Gross domestic product, broad measure of goods and services produced in the January through March period, increased at only 1.6%, below the 2.4% estimate. Yet another thing that Joe Biden has to kind of answer for. Well, don't pay attention to that because of this. Don't pay attention to that because of this. Look over there, Palestinians. Whatever he can do to get this stuff off the front page, he's going to try to do. And of course, one of the things he's doing is measures that I think will really hurt the economy long term, though maybe not immediately. The EPA is severely limiting pollution from coal burning power plants. Again, you remember all the huge debate we had over coal power plants in the Senate, and then they passed the law. Oh, no, you don't remember that? Oh, that's because it didn't happen. This just is another EPA regulation and basically trying to put the coal industry out of business. You may remember his old boss, Barack Obama, saying he would necessarily bankrupt coal plants when he was running back in the day. Well, that is exactly what he's doing. I hope you're listening in Pennsylvania. I mean, one of the few places that still has coal burning plants are there. Lots of coal jobs there. West Virginia is another place. They're all over. But Pennsylvania might be the key state as far as swing states go. And he's trying to end your industry. And maybe you like that. I don't know. Maybe you're like, I want to elect a president who's going to end the industry I work in. But I don't know. Maybe that's another idea. And I will say, we have a lot of coal. We could burn coal for a very long time. There are technologies making it better. You can argue about the pollution all you want. But if you're going to do that, pass a freaking law. But I can't get the thing I want because other people won't vote with me. Then you don't get it. Okay? We don't always get what we want. My kids want to eat candy for breakfast every day. Okay? They don't always get it. Okay? That's just, you're going to have to win the votes of your mom and dad to get that one done. If you don't win the votes of mom and dad, you don't get what you want. So sorry, boys and girls. When you got to buy a home, you got to have a real estate agent. When you got to have a real estate agent, you don't want one that sucks. So if you don't want that one that sucks, go to realestateagentsitrust.com. It's a pretty simple formula here, guys. I mean, come on. Glenn started this company years ago because he wanted to find the best agents in his area. And this company didn't exist, so he couldn't find any. He had bad ones. He then decided to work with, it was like there's like a big list of the 400 top real estate agents in America. He was working with them. I think it's through the Wall Street Journal, I think, identified them. I don't know. I've heard him tell the story a few times. And he worked with these agents, the highest performing agents in their area. And he was able to figure out, okay, here are the things that we need. Here's the performance levels that we should be hitting. Here are the different characteristics. So that's what he did. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com is the result of that wonderful, wonderful thought process. You should go there because it's free for you. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. Get the best agent in your area. No matter where you are, free service to you. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. It's difficult to run a presidential campaign. You got a lot of things going on, a lot of things to deal with, a lot of factors you need to kind of keep on your plate and balance all sort of at the same time. And that's why you need smart surrogates to go out there and argue the points for you. You need people to come out and defend you, people who are smart and intelligent, go on TV and say the things that will win over voters. And that's why, of course, Joe Biden has Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez emerges as key Biden surrogate for progressives and young people. Why not just say for idiots? Kind of would be more descriptive of what she actually does, right? She comes out and she says really dumb things and really dumb people cheer her on. That's the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez guarantee. So I don't know. We will see how well that works out. And I think a lot of people say, well, why would the president of the United States want some moron like AOC arguing on his behalf? But have we really, like, eliminated the possibility that Joe Biden is also a moron? I mean, can we at least take this seriously for a moment? Now, yes, he's incoherent. Yes, he's got some version of dementia. It might be dementia light. I don't know. It might be diet dementia. I'm not sure. But he's got some version of it. And now he's got moments like this happening. I mean, shouldn't this just end your campaign if this happens? Watch.
Imagine what we can do next. Four more years. Pause.
Four more years. Pause.
Does he say that? I can't even tell if he just, does he say that twice? I don't even think he was supposed to necessarily even say the four more years stuff. It doesn't make any sense when he said it. And then he just says the word pause like he's Ron Burgundy. This is embarrassing. And there's no way to do it. If you're an aide, there's nothing you can do. You can't be like, don't say the next thing on this teleprompter. Pause. Then he would just go, four more years. Don't say the next thing on this teleprompter. Pause. There's no way to defend against that sort of stupidity. And that's why AOC is a perfect fit for this campaign. We talked to Glenn Beck about his big special this week. So many other great shows here on the network. We've got the Blaze Original series. I've got one of those documentaries coming up in the next couple months. Bottom line is there's so much stuff on Blaze TV right now, and it's a great subscription. Any gift that you have coming up, it's a great subscription. And as well, it's just important because honestly, you're not gonna get good coverage from these other places. So blazetv.com/stew. Promo code is Stew. Please subscribe and join the movement.